Welcome everyone to Blind Bargains Cast, episode 39.
No. Halloween's done.
Over? Okay.
You need to be Santa Joe.
Ooh. Oh, that sounds good. Have you been a good boy, JJ?
Welcome everybody to Blind Bargains Cast 39. That's Joe Steinkamp. I'm JJ Mello, and oh man, you can maybe you should sign up for a Fiverr account, Joe.
And
you can,
and so have we. Oh my god,
you could sell your celebrity impressions on Fiverr there, man. And
is that what I'm gonna do? Patrick made me sound really good. By the way, man, Patrick made last week sound fantastic. Thank you.
I wasn't sure that was gonna come off,
but he always makes us sound so much better than we are. So thank you, Mr. Purdue. And thank you, everybody, who gave me comments and retweeted. I saw some people were actually playing Aftershocks while listening to the episode, and were actually going out and getting audio defense, or I had people actually, you know, telling me, oh, I never thought about this game. I should go back and visit it. So that's awesome. I'm glad that people had a lot of fun playing around with some apps that I like playing with. I also like playing with my Chromecast audio. I have one. I bought one last week, and
copycat.
Oh, man, you were so right. This is so much fun. I'm getting Google Play Music Family Pass now, so I'm in for the penny and the pound because
really?
I can actually listen
Spotify?
To I can actually listen to our very little show on Google Play soon, huh?
That's true. Oh yeah, we Google is starting a podcast service. You know, I don't know where they get this idea from, but we're submitted. We're already in, but it's not public yet. But once it's public, that'll, you know, add that to the 74 other ways you can listen to us. And why not?
Yes,
you know, we're
many,
on Google Podcasts or on Apple News now. You know, you
can, or maybe on us. Apple TV through AirPlay. I've seen some people do that because I have the new Apple TV as well. Jay, I have a
tune in via Chromecast audio. You can do that right now. On the,
that's
on the
true. That would work.
You could do that. You could do it while you're out and about using the Buzz Clip. The Buzz Clip is a wearable device. It's a little thing that clips on you, and you can walk around, and it will let you know about those low-hanging trees that are in front of you, those branches and signposts and things like that. And we have the founders of the Buzz Clip coming up a little bit later in the show to tell us about that and their crowdfunding campaign and how you can get one. So stay tuned for that.
Absolutely. I mentioned a second ago that I got the new Apple TV, and it is a work in progress. Before you ask, should I run out there and get it? Understand, anything like this is, you know, first generation of a new generation, because even though it's the fourth generation Apple TV, it's using tvOS on the inside. And so, funny story, before we turned it on, we were just kind of messing with the remote, and we had actually flipped the install to Spanish and had to use our high school Spanish to get through that so we could get into it and then restart from factory defaults because we couldn't go backwards. Yeah, it was very funny. Yes. Give me Google Translate, quick.
How do you say help in Spanish?
The thing about that was we couldn't back up. On most things, you could usually get back to the language, but we couldn't. And even unplugging it and replugging it, we came right back into Spanish. I was like, all right, well, let's just get through this and then come redo it again from factory reset. I also picked up a Nimbus controller, which is a Bluetooth controller for
Nimbus?
The Apple TV. Nimbus Steel Series Nimbus. It's about $49.99. And it is a part of the Steel Series controller family. I've always wanted an MFI controller, and they were having them at launch at the Apple store. So I picked one up and am very happy about it. And I will talk about that next week. But any quick questions I can answer for you, Jay, about how Apple TV is?
I'm curious on app support. So there's already been one of the things of this version versus the last version is you actually, like you said, the tvOS. So Hulu, which is an app which was accessible on the old TV, is not on this. So are you finding other examples like that, or is it mostly other things accessible?
There's a lot of games and stuff, so those may not necessarily be accessible, especially since they're leaning more towards the PlayStation,
I wonder if like the
Xbox
Watch ESPN
crowd.
App or some of the, you know.
I'm curious to try Grubhub for Apple TV. I think that's going to be really interesting because then you never have to get off the couch other than to get the movie. I mean, the food at the door and then start your movie. I have found that sometimes some features will make voiceover kind of choppy. So if you play something from Apple Radio and then go back, you can actually find voiceover kind of dropping in and out or not reading column. They'll read the column, but not what's under it. And you have turning voiceover on and off doesn't necessarily clear it sometimes. So getting into something else, like going into Netflix will sometimes turn off all other audio sources, and then VoiceOver seems to work better again. So it's really weird how it's doing memory management. I have a 32 gig version. One of the things I would advise is if you are in a household with somebody who's going to play a lot of games or download a lot of things, or they're very visual and they want to get those screensavers you hear about, those screensavers are 600 meg a piece. And it warns you about that in the download. So if you figure that 4 gig is going to go to the device and 600 is going to go to the screensaver, that could eat up a lot. I've seen a lot of people talking about, well, will it have Alex? Don't know. From what I understand is tvOS and watchOS have a lot of similarities. If you have an iPad app, iPad apps will kind of come over to the Apple TV a lot easier as far as some simple programming and flipping switches to get it to work. So Alex could possibly come over there, but that's giving up like a gig again to your device just to have that voice. And Siri is interesting on the TV. I would say the thing that kind of freaks me out the most is that trackpad up at the top. It is very easy to accidentally hit that and swipe it and fast forward through a movie or something. And that's kind of a downside because you have to learn how to hold the remote or pick up the remote without really tapping that. And yeah, you can set the sensitivity a little higher, but it is really easy to do. It is the top half of the remote. Also, you have to remember you have to charge your remote because it's a lightning connector on the bottom of it.
You mentioned Siri, but one of the cool things I did notice you could do with Siri, though, you say, you know, fast forward 2 minutes.
Yes. Start from the beginning. Or what did he say? It'll back it up like 30 seconds to a minute.
So there are a lot of cool things that you can do there. And of course, like you said, version one, you know, watchOS is already on version
two. Early adopter. So I knew what I was getting when I got into it. I like it. I'm not complaining. Please don't take any of these as complaints because, again, it's early days and I've had an iPad one. I know what I was getting into when I got into it. But it's going to be a neat little stocking stuffer for those of you. If you don't have one, this is a good time to get into one. Yeah.
But yes, you know, 150 it starts at, and you can get them now. They're out, and you know, check away. If you get one, let us know what you think.
Yes, and iPad Pro is next. So for those of you looking to complete your Apple set, if you already have your Apple Watch, your 6S,
collect them all.
And you have your new keyboard and your new trackpad and new MacBook, well, this is the last one, and then you're on to Watch 2. I know. Oh, yes. Don't forget about the pencil. Oh, remind me after show. I'll tell you about Surface Book. I played with that a little bit, too. So one of the other things that happened while we were out was that, Jaws 17 updated. We talked about a Jaws 16 not too long ago, and Jaws 17 has been released with some wonderful new things for UEB, as well as some other ways to read emoji, from what I understand. So that's kind of neat.
Yes, emoji is there, but there's no emoji repeat filter. it was the complaint. So if someone did like 20 smiling faces in a row, apparently.
Yeah, but you know, VoiceOver does that too. Do you, I don't know how I feel about that.
And the more serious stuff, some more touchscreen improvements. They've done a lot with Windows 10, web, which is
Office 2016 stuff coming.
Yeah, there's some web stuff. They're calling it smart web, but some of that is kind of a catch up.
Yeah, domain scripting. Yeah,
domain scripting is interesting.
Yeah,
you can script a website. It's kind of like creating a plug, you know, a Firefox. What was the thing that you
like an extension almost?
Yeah,
like
an extension. What did you call those things that used? I'm forgetting the name. Some, you know, but you used to be able to get that app for Firefox that you could do like little customizations on the page on a fly.
Oh, right.
No, exactly. You know, whatever and that thing.
Some people complained that there was no merge utility in this new version. I saw that a lot on Twitter about people saying, how do I move my settings? And that there
Grease
is
Monkey
not
is what
one.
I'm thinking of.
That's oh, yes, Grease of. Monkey. Good grief. I hadn't thought of that in ages.
No merge utility. Yeah. And now here's an interesting little sidebar. And I'm not sure if it's a legal thing or what. Jaws 17 removes from research at the scores from ESPN. Saying they need to come up, get an agreement with ESPN or come to an amicable resolution so they can bring those scores back. So I'm not sure if that's just a programming issue or if ESPN actually said something, you know, hey, why are you taking our scores? I did a legal search and I couldn't find anything on it from that route, but it's really interesting that one of their main sources is gone from research it in 17. I guess someone could write their own custom little thing and try to do a, you know, but unofficially, there is no ESPN in 17. So a couple of little things that are gone. But you see the domain scripting is there. Was it domain web scripting and settings too?
Yep.
touchscreen stuff. Now,
and our good friend of the show, Brian Harchin, has some updates to his products as well over at Harchin Consultancy. And he was right on top of it and has been talking about how domain scripting will be helping a lot of things that he looks at and does, certainly with some of the training he does over in the United Kingdom.
Leacy and JDictate. There's a new Leacy coming out too, Beyond 17. So there's a minor update now, and there's going to be a more major one coming. And then JDictate is working with the newer versions of Dragon Dictate that just came out. So some interesting developments there as well that you can... Brian's always been on top of that stuff, so always good to see things get updated pretty much on day of release, which is...
Exactly. And if you haven't got an SMA or you don't have one coming or you don't feel like paying for one, there was just a recent JAWS 16 update. So while you don't get some of these features that we've mentioned, they did do some nice updates just recently in the last couple of weeks.
But a lot of people did get the SMAs at the NFB convention, especially, and a little bit to a lesser extent at ACB, because they were so cheap. So
exactly.
That was kind of the plan, right? You know, to get you right. people back into the... Because I'd be really curious, you know, one thing WebAIM didn't do in their survey, you know, when they ask what screen reader, I know a lot of especially JAWS users, more than any other screen reader, that like, well, yeah, I run JAWS 14 or JAWS 15, you know, as a, their screen reader now. Right. So it's, I think it's a lot more common, and that's just anecdotal, but a lot more common that people are running some older version of JAWS because that's what they're able to get at the time as opposed to something else. So... I don't know.
Or they supplement it with the other screen reader. So maybe they're using NVDA for something more current, or they're using NVDA for more or better Firefox support and using, say, JAWS on Internet Explorer a bit more. And it really depends on the use case and what have you. It's certainly not a one screen reader rules them all world anymore.
Well, one of the reasons you might use NVDA, or one of the reasons you might not before, actually, is because of Eloquence, which was always one of those things that you couldn't legally do.
Legally. And the, yeah, and I then, was going to beat you to it.
Right. Yeah. Then there was the sappy version. Then there was the sappy version earlier in the summer that Code Factory came out. And now there's another option, which is NVDA specific. So for about $70, you can get an NVDA add-on that'll let you run Eloquence and Vocalizer Expressive. So iPhone voices and Eloquence all together, a whole bunch of languages. It just works on NVDA. So unlike the other one, which you could use in Jim Kitchen's games, as I demonstrated many shows back, don't ask me which number, but you can you go hit this one. You have to get directly through Code Factory, and you can get the NVDA Eloquence Vocalizer Expressive package, including a 7-day demo. And while they're working on eSpeak and apparently trying to make it sound better, at the moment it's still eSpeak. Yeah, the eSpeak voices, there's a few people that love it, right? And most don't. And they're working on that, but at least there are more options now at a reasonable price if you want the voices you're used to. I'm not going to say the better sounding voices, because Eloquence isn't necessarily the best sounding voice in the world. We're just used to it, right? You know, you've been using it since like 2001 or 2002. So you can get the voices that you're used to legally now with NVDA and several different ways. So that's definitely, to me, and from talking to customers, that's always been one of the big deal breakers for people that didn't, I don't want to switch to NVDA because I can't use this voice. And that problem has largely been solved now.
Well, they could try different experiments with voices and play around with things. You know, there's a wonderful little thing we got from Seeing with Sound about experimental ways of approaching the web with NVDA. And we have a link here in the show notes to that particular article. What do you think, Jay? I mean, different ways about images all of a sudden. We've always heard about how Google is doing a lot of image recognition, and now Facebook, you know, we just talked about them recently, and it looks like we're having more options for more recognition of everyday objects.
Images is one of those next frontier things, you know. Right now, it's still very early. Okay, how do you translate an image into something that you can use? You've had the VOIC, which is, you know, the Peter Myers program for Android, and I think it was on those Nokias before that, and then made all these crazy sounds and everything, and mostly illegible, although a few people figured it out. But, you know, what is that? Do we turn images into sound? Do we turn them into vibrations? That's being tried. Do we turn them into descriptions?
Horrible emojis?
Do we turn them into taco emoji? Yes.
Maybe, you know,
all taco emoji. That's, you know, we'll just express every, you know, but... What do we do with images? I mean, and there's pros and cons to all that. If you turn it into descriptions, then you're being a bit subjective in some cases, your possibility. So But at the same time, lots of blind people, especially those born blind, may not know what an image of anything looks like. So the fact that it's a certain shape isn't going to mean anything to them. So, you know, there may be more than one solution, but that's definitely an interesting problem that's being tackled a lot more recently, which is cool because we're becoming in a more image-based, emoji-based world here.
Uh-huh. We started with cave paintings and somehow we're going right back to pictures on walls.
Hieroglyphics. Yep.
Back. Yeah. Here we go. One of the things that was always troublesome for me was to catch up on shows like Main Menu and other things from ACB Radio. Well, that and so much more is now available in the new ACB app on iOS. And hey, Randy Resnick is right there in the tutorial, which is kind of cool.
Hey, and guess who made the app?
Somebody we know, somebody...
This seems to be a theme here. We had Lynn on a couple weeks ago.
Somebody who's a big fan of the TARDIS. Yeah. Oh, Michael Doyce. There you go.
Yeah, hey, Michael's been going app crazy lately. And once again, referencing Mike, because he made another app, and this is the one he made for the ACB. Yeah, you can catch up on your ACB radio, or you can connect to your local affiliates and things like that. So that's free on the iPhone, and you can download that currently. It's always cool to have... apps for the organizations. NFB's had theirs for a while, so it's good to have ACB having one now as well.
As part of our equal time rule, we have a story for our National Federation of the Blind. This is a part of the fairness doctrine. I learned about this in college and journalism class.
Anymore, does it?
No, neither does the 777 or the 12-12-12 rule. William Randolph Hearst would be so proud. So there's my Tom Merritt history moment for the week.
Oh, my gosh.
National Federation of the Blind has a new scholarship and a program, and you could, get a scholarship and learn about old farts like me who knows these things about broadcast journalism. And you could start that. You've got a story here right off of blindbargains.com.
Yep. And it'd be scholarship time. I want an 07. That's a long time ago. Wow. 9 scholarship classes ago from this one. You're going to win is $3,000.
Yeah. Well, you were getting to the number. That's why I mentioned it. But the least you could win is $1,000, right?
$3,000. The least you win is $3,000. Okay. Maybe when you were my age, it was $1,000.
Yeah, $1,000. Well, yeah. We've taken into account for inflation. Yes.
So that would be $1,000. Just as an example, this past year, you got your scholarship prize. You got $1,000 from Ray Kurzweil. You got $1,000 from Google.
Yeah.
You got an Android tablet. I mean, there were a couple. I think you got a plaque and you got some other things as well. You end up with a whole bunch of stuff. So at least you're going to win really is like $5,000 all the way up to about $14,000 worth of scholarship money. There's 30 of them. If you are a blind person going into college or in college in the fall of 2016, you might as well apply. You don't have to be an NFB member. In fact, many of the winners are not NFB members, and it ends up being the first time experience.
From last year in Orlando. You're right.
So really, plus the free convention. Yeah, that's another huge value. So always cool. Yeah, apply for these scholarships, folks, because somebody's got to win. It might as well be you, which I think was the slogan of the Illinois Lottery, but we'll use it here too.
Can't win if you don't play. There you go. Right.
Yeah. Right. We got your numbers.
Absolutely. But seriously, it will help you a great deal. Not only that, it's a networking opportunity. And we're poking a little fun at it, but and not at the program itself, just in general, as we are apt to do on this program. But what a great opportunity. It's something that you can have. It's a great way to meet other people like yourself that are going to school, that might share your interest, who might be having the same kind of access issues. You're forming bonds that will help you get through the college experience. And so the National Association of Blind Students and other organizations are great places for that kind of thing. But like Jay said, it's right there. I mean, get it, grab it, go.
You look at the number of people that apply for this, which is in the hundreds, which seems like a lot, but that's nothing compared to a lot of other scholarships where you might have 10,000 people apply for one. If you have say 500 or 600 applying for 30, that's pretty good odds. That's very good odds. So go for it.
We talk about markets and surveys and stuff all the time, and there's a low number of people that actually submit to those sometimes, but you could be that one person that actually helps that organization. You could be that person that had the use case or the perspective that could change everything. And that's exactly what AMI is looking for from blind Canadians.
Hey, we have a story for Canada people.
Yay, Canada.
Yay. You know, you guys are too U.S. centric. Well, that's what we get. But so thanks, Kai, who told us about this. This has been going on for a while, but we never mentioned it. So we are now. AMI, who Accessible Media Inc., really cool people. I had a cool little party.
We've interviewed CSUN. Robert Pearson on this very show.
Yeah, definitely. Cool people. And if you want to give them feedback, they have a research panel which you can do surveys or focus groups or phone calls, you know, interviews, and you will get a little bit of financial compensation. So that doesn't hurt at all as well. So if you're in Canada and you enjoy the TV programs or audio programs that AMI provides, or maybe you don't enjoy them and you want to tell them why, we've got information in the show notes on how you can get onto their research panel, and why not? It's one of those things they're going to let you know that there's a survey available and you can choose to do it or not do it depending on your time. So you're not really committing to much of anything until you go forward with it. So, but why not? I love giving my opinion, and sometimes your opinions become new features. You never know.
My opinion is Hulu has a bunch of stuff from Netflix that doesn't have any audio description applied to it. That's kind of a downer. I mean,
yeah, it is.
Got a bunch of
that's
stuff.
That's okay. The Hulu app isn't accessible anyway on Apple TV.
Exactly. On my Apple TV, exactly. It's not that great on my iPad either. The thing that you get with AMI is a lot of audio description and great content there in Canada. And the thing you guys have over in the UFK is a lot of audio description in the BBC iPlayer and other things, which we don't get here in the United States. So it behooves you to wonder who to oneself. If I wish to like see something like Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. legally with audio description, and it's not there on the ABC app, for some reason all the dramas don't seem to be audio described on that app, but the comedies seem to be audio described. I don't understand that. I could procure it from a land far away and fly it across the pond. But how could I do such a thing? How is that possible?
Well, on the ACB's a growing audio description resource web gallery of pages, ordering UK-produced described videos in the USA. Now, it's a bit of a process, but it is possible. Pretty much dealing with Amazon especially and finding out which ones. The key is you want to make sure that you get the certain DVDs or Blu-ray, especially Blu-ray, that are A, compatible with Region 1, which is North America, if you're here.
Right. You know, unless or you're looking at getting a multi-version player, right. Or you're looking at getting software that'll play multi-version.
Yep, there's those as well. Yep. And also, you want to make sure you're getting the correct version. You're going to have 10 different versions of the same movie, and they won't all have the audio description checks. So anyway, they have some info on here and how you might go about doing some of that. And good resource. At least gives you another option if you want to buy some of the movies. And you might have to bring them in from the UK Amazon site, or you can buy them from the US Amazon site. But there are some options, and, you know, options are good. And we've linked to that resource because it's something I hadn't thought of before. And I thought it was a pretty cool little take on describe
that I watch
audio.
A lot of British television and follow a lot of British series. I kind of sort of knew about some of this or had obtained one or two for the collection. Not as much as I had anymore because with instant streaming and the internet, like I can go read a synopsis and figure it out. Oh, that must have been what happened, you know, during such and such. So I've been doing a lot more guesswork, but still, if it's something I really like, yeah, then I want to be able to get the audio description track. But you're absolutely right, because sometimes there's like, well, let's take it for instance, like here in the States, Jurassic World, there's a version that's exclusive only to Target, you know, and that has some value added materials, VAM, that may not fit on the disc. So they had to cut something, and sometimes it's audio description and other languages. So it might be like Portuguese or something also gets cut. So yeah, you have to read those descriptions pretty well on Amazon.
And the US there. Amazon site, one of the points they make doesn't always list the ones that have audio descriptions. So you kind of have to pull it from the UK site to see if it has it, and then you can compare it and
yeah.
I'll let them explain it. You go there and you can read about it.
Yeah, definitely. So if you are interested in that, it takes a little bit of footwork, but once when you have it down, then it's a lot easier to be able to look for that kind of thing. Probably a lot easier than broadcasting for 65 years.
Amazing.
65 years. That is just an amazing landmark. And that's what Ed Walker had done. who for many of you on the East Coast was a familiar name and very familiar on the weekend to hear certain types of music. Ed celebrated his final broadcast, and I actually saw President Rick Abono tweeting about this, that he was listening with his family, and he did this broadcast from a hospital room, and this story here, and you can find it at blindbargains.com, is very moving and just really amazing. A nice write-up about Ed's final show and what it was like for him, and there wasn't a dry eye in that hospital wing for what Ed was doing. And I thought it was just amazing class and grace. And there are very few broadcasters like this anymore. And so most of the broadcasters who came up in that era have either retired or unfortunately not with us anymore. But this is a wonderful story and definitely worth a read over at Blind Bargains.
You may not have heard of Ed Walker. I actually hadn't. But he has a couple really big connections. One being he helped start WAMU, which is one of the big public radio stations on the East Coast, along with friend of his, Willard Scott. And then him and Willard, for 20 years, hosted a radio show in D.C. called The Joy Boys. It was one of the most popular shows on the radio in the Washington, D.C. area. So if you were around for that, you know, it was an improvised comedy show. And, you know, it sounds like just a fun time. And then, of course, Ed went on to do all sorts of other things here and there. But you know, he founded the radio station in 1950, so like you said, 65 years. One of the amazing life. He went to the Maryland School for the Blind, was the first blind person at American University in Washington, D.C. So what a great life. And yeah, do check out that story. It was, even if it's one, you know, someone that you've never known, that's what's the case for me. It really was cool reading about it. So we've got it over on the website.
So there's still a lot of stuff to come up. We've got a wonderful interview. We've got our sound off. And of course, the last word, what possibly could be there? You never really know. I don't think there's food this week, though. I did have pumpkin spice Oreos, and there are some, mocha M&Ms that are going on around, Cafe Mocha M&Ms. Those are new, so I just get the food mentioned in here, so that way it's out of the way.
You know. Let me get you off of food for a second. Okay. Tell you for a second, we did talk about some new products at AT Guys the last couple of weeks.
Awesome.
And you reminded me that we just added another one last week, and it's already been selling like gangbusters. It's the Bluetooth multimedia remote for your iPhone. What? Remote for your iPhone. Yes. So how this works is it's about maybe 3-4 inches long, and it has several buttons on it that you can use to do things like play and pause, go to the next track or the previous track, rewind and fast forward, volume up, volume down. My favorite, there's a home button right on the remote, so you can hold it down and do Siri from the remote. Yeah.
Wow.
So you got your phone
cheaper than
your pocket.
Apple TV, I'll tell you that.
That's true. You got your phone in your pocket. You got the speaker across the room or whatever. You know, there's the magic tap that you can use for playing and pausing, but there isn't really anything for skipping through songs or fast forwarding, things like that. It's really just easy to do from the multimedia remote. And by the way, outside of the iPhone, you can use it with anything that is media enabled. So if you had a Windows computer and you use Kodi, which is a media app that some of you might be familiar with, or if you had a Mac with Bluetooth, or if you had an Android phone, as long as you're within range, Bluetooth range, about 30 feet, you can control these things using the Bluetooth multimedia remote. It's $34.99. It's available right now on the atguys.com website, along with many of our other new products. You can go there and sign up for our newsletter, and we will email you about cool things and sales and much more. And of course, we got Black Friday sales coming up, so always fun, and Cyber Monday, and oh, it's the most wonderful time of the year at atguys.com. 269-216-4798.
Let's head on over and hear an interview, and then we'll come back with the rest of the show, but get ready to learn a little bit more about mobility in just a second.
Welcome back to episode 39 of the Blind Bargains Cast for the beginning of November 2015. And we've talked a lot about crowdfunding and different campaigns and new gadgets that are coming out and things that are on the horizon. And recently we've come across another one of these crowdfunding campaigns, which seems to have some legs. Immersive is a company that is making a new product called the Buzz Clip. And here to tell us what exactly that is Arjun Mali and Bin Liu, the CEO and CFO or CFO and CEO, I guess how you want to put it, of Immersive to tell us what exactly the Buzz Clip is. Guys, welcome to the Blind Parkins cast.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having us. Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
So I'll let you guys decide who wants to tell us a little bit about yourselves, I guess, first, how you ended up getting connected into the blindness community, and then we'll kind of get into what the Buzz Clip is and the campaign.
Yeah, so I guess we'll start off with a bit of history on the company, on how we started. We're both fresh graduates last year, and I studied engineering at the University of Toronto, and Arjun studied finance and economics in Masters University. And the reason why we got into this industry is, you know, a lot to do with personal reasons. And then also opportunity came to us through a incubator at the University of Toronto. So my dad has glaucoma himself. And although he has a lot of vision remaining right now, he's past age of 50, right? So it's only going to get worse and worse from this point onwards. So I'm just hoping to make some gadgets for him, you know, down the line. And I'll let Arjun tell you guys about his connection with the community.
So Ben and I met quite a while ago, and we've been friends for a while. And he actually proposed the idea to me of creating something that would significantly impact and help people living with vision loss. And I sort of resonated with that right away because for the longest time I know, like my family's been supporting a blind school and orphanage in Delhi, India. So it was my grandma that was actually partially sighted, and vision loss was a close thing to her. So she used to heavily donate to a blind school and orphanage. And it's just sort of been a tradition within my family to continue her sort of legacy there. So when we first started researching this market and looking into how to create something that would be really beneficial, I went out to India and interviewed a lot of the people, the blind staff, as well as blind children and students, and sort of figured out what was missing and what the needs are. And that's how we sort of came up with this idea.
So you came up with the idea, you mentioned the incubator. For those who are not familiar, that's kind of, it's a way for someone who has an idea essentially to spend several weeks and really focus on it and try to hone it and try to figure out how to bring it to market, right? Is that, would you say that's a good layman's explanation of it?
It started off as a 6-week intensive course where they put you in touch with all sorts of people like lawyers and people from government, and really gave you the resources to fast track a idea or a concept.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that you know, the incubator we're in is slightly different from traditional ones. They're actually not taking anything from us at all, as compared to typically an incubator, you know, would take a chunk of the company, right, for helping you out.
Right, they're giving you resources in exchange for money or equity.
Yeah, exactly. So this the incubator we're in is called the Impact Center, and basically it's you know, University of Toronto professors and past entrepreneurs. And they're just basically giving back. They're just giving us full support and asking nothing back, which has been really helpful through the last whole year.
So from all these discussions, you came up with the Buzz Clip, which is, it's not a, I don't know if I'd call it a first of its kind product, because it's, there certainly have been devices in the past that have aimed to kind of alert you of what's in front of you by vibrations or other things. But obviously you're trying to improve upon that concept and make it your own. So tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. So, I completely agree with you in the sense that, you know, the technology's been around for a very long time. Like, you know, cane-based sensors, handheld sensors, there's been a lot of those around, right? So what's unique about our device is the fact that it's wearable. And, you know, we spend a lot of effort making it really small and discreet. That's number one. And then also we made it very flexible. And in terms of the sensor itself and the response, we made that a lot more, you know, sharper, accurate, and, you know, just faster response in general, right? These things are minor improvements, I guess, in their own fields, but once you add up everything, it changes the user experience completely.
What does it feel when it's on your wrist, and what does it feel like? You said it's wearable, I'm assuming on your wrist.
No, actually. It's if you imagine a sort of, I guess, we usually compare it to a tie clip, but it's a bit bigger than a tie clip. So it's actually slightly larger than the size of a lighter, a bit heavier because it's aluminum shell. That's for to make it more durable. But essentially what it is, it's a small device that you can clip onto any opening of the clothing.
Oh, right. And I did read this at one point too, but now you're bringing it back to me. And then that you said, according to the crowdfunding, you could have even more than one of these things, right? And clip them in various parts.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it, right? Because it's so small and flexible, depending on your personal need, right? You can use as many as you want, or you know, even just with one, as many tricks of using the device itself, right? So I guess I'll just give you a few typical use cases.
Sure.
You know, the most standard one, which is the one that we put on all of our material, is that we're trying to address, you know, head level objects, things like low hanging branch, signboards, or even just a truck parked the wrong place, right? So those things that guide dogs and white canes don't always pick those things up, right? And we're recommending that any cane or guide dog user would put one right above their collar, and we fine tune the range such that it covers, you know, from your upper body, from your belly button up to above your head, and just a bit over both sides of your shoulders. So that way, you only ever get responses on things that's going to be directly in your path. So that's the most standard use case. But then aside from that, you know, the other use cases we kind of found out through our testers, actually. Some of our testers has been using the bus clip for lineups. So say you're at the bank or you're at the coffee shop, and, you know, instead of constantly having to feel out the person in front of you, now you'd actually, the device would let you know that the person in front of you is moving forward, because the feedback will get weaker and slower as they get further away. And once you start walking again and you get within half a meter, there's a warning system at half a meter to let you know to stop.
Feedback being vibration, right?
Exactly, yeah. And then we've had people use it for security reasons. Like, you know, as horrible as it is, like one of our friends actually had his phone taken out of his hand in broad daylight. And for him, he actually really likes the fact that he can put it behind him. And, you know, if he doesn't hear anybody walking behind him, but then he gets a response, right? It might just be someone sneaking up. So all you got to do is just raise your voice and cause a little attention.
Oh, well, so it's kind of like having eyes behind your head. That's
mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, there's many more use cases like that. I'm not going to list right. them one by one.
What's the range? I'm a really fast walker, and the average step is, what, 2 or 3 feet, I would say? And, you know, how far is this? You know, is it going to keep up?
So I'm not too familiar with the conversion between feet and meters.
We can have, but, yeah.
But
we'll figure that out.
Yeah, our range is actually 2 meters. So we have two options.
That's so about 6 feet.
Yeah, yeah, so you can
six
either
or seven
pick,
feet, yeah.
Yeah, you can pick the 2 meter range mode, or you can pick a 1 meter range mode. So typically the 2 meter range mode will be outside where you walk, you know, at normal pace. And the 1 meter mode will be indoors where there's more dense furniture and objects
is,
around.
Is 2 meters enough for a fast, for someone who's a pretty obnoxiously
so
fast
So far,
walker?
Since we've been testing it, yeah, it's been to be responsive enough. It actually alerts you pretty quickly, even with a fast stride.
Yeah, I would assume you have to have some fast reaction time too.
Yeah.
I mean,
so right now,
walk fast.
Yeah, right now the device actually produces a vibration within less than 100 milliseconds. So, which is way faster than our reaction time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, even if you're walking at a fairly fast pace, as soon as something enters, the device will pick it up. You get that first vibration when it first enters 2 meters. So based on the speed you were telling me about, you end up roughly getting about 3 responses within that time frame. First, when it first enters the 2 meter. And second, you feel a very obvious change when it enters from 2 meter into 1 meter. And when you're half a meter away, the device will just go nuts. It won't stop
until
you actually
stop. Is it strength of vibration?
It.
Is it patterns, or how is it?
So, so it's on and off vibrations. So when it's further away, it's on for a very short amount of time and off for a very long period of time. And when it's closer, it's on for a longer period of time. And you know, the intervals between vibrations, it's much shorter. And because the motor takes time to speed up, so the longer. Typically, the longer the time it has to, you know, reach its maximum spinning speed, the stronger the vibration. So you feel much stronger vibrations at much shorter intervals when you get closer.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that, I mean, it's going to take some getting used to, right? If you take, what is the average step? Would you say close to a meter at the most for a
yeah, you know, just under a meter.
So 2 steps, and if you, you know, so you have. If you take about 2 steps per second at a normal speed, and you have about a second to react to whatever it is. But you know, you wouldn't want to. You've obviously come to the conclusion that you wouldn't want to increase the range any further or have that option, because that would just create too many false positives or...
Right. Exactly. So actually, one of our testers, he's on the video, pretty close friend of ours, Ryan Vroom. He's, you know, he's over 6 foot. So he has huge steps. And so far, he hasn't found a problem with it yet.
Wondering, also if it comes to other things, say if you wanted to actually try to take it running, I mean, that would definitely be perhaps
at the moment. Case. Yeah. At the moment, I wouldn't recommend taking that for running. Just because, I mean, the speed is there, right? But running would need a different sort of range. It needs, like, you know, much longer range and much narrower beam of for the sensor itself, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll have updates available, I guess, every 1 year or so coming up. We're not just one product company, right? So those kind of stuff will start slowly incorporate one by one.
So when you mentioned the beam and the range and sensing objects, how is it doing this? I mean, I realize you might have trade secrets and things, but is it doing it by colors? Is it doing it by some other means? How are you going to guarantee you're going to get every object that's in front of you?
So we're actually using ultrasound. So, and the reason why we're using ultrasound is because, you know, sound reflects off any surface, right? Regardless of shape, color, you know, smoothness, the sound would always come back. So we're using very high frequency sound that's being pulsed in the direction the sensor is pointing at. And just no matter what, if there's something in front, it will come back. Right now, we've been testing it with headphone cables, the really thin cables. So anything down to that size, it would easily pick it up.
And it would catch them.
Yeah.
You know, there's, like you said, there's a lot of different applications. I had a friend talking to me about this earlier who was saying he does a lot of martial arts and things like that, and just having wanting to know who's in front of him or how close they are to him. And, you know, you see, a lot of times you just have things that you don't even think of. And I didn't think of the person behind you. That, heck, sighted people could use that.
Yeah, and the in that perspective, similar to, I guess, the case a friend was mentioning, one of our friends actually really likes it now because, you know, he's totally blind, but sometimes he's having a conversation with people, even us sometimes, right? Even though we hang out with them a lot, you still forget sometimes. You're in the middle of the conversation. Maybe we just get up to go and get water, but he doesn't realize we're gone and he'll continue the conversation. But now, you know, he would realize as soon as anything happens in front of him.
You ever thought of doing a reverse mode where it wouldn't vibrate until...
Yeah, actually, I just wanted to mention that. So that's a new feature that we just added in. So we realized, obviously, that if you're wearing it and it's at the 1 meter or the 2 meter mode and you're having a conversation with someone that's right in front of you, it might be irritating because it might be going off all the time, especially if you're having a long chat. So what we've incorporated now is that once the sensor detects something that is at a fixed distance, i.e. like you're talking to someone and both of you are not moving, after 3 seconds, it will effectively go to sleep and conserve the power. And then... if either you or that person moves again, it'll kick back into gear and let you know what's going on.
So it's a power conservation thing and an annoyance conservation thing.
Yeah, basically. Time. Exactly.
Got you. What is the power like?
The power in terms of battery life? Or
yeah.
So in terms of battery life, it will easily last a minimum of 10 hours right now. And it's chargeable through a micro USB port. So just like you charge your standard Android phones. Mm-hmm. Charges pretty quickly, and so far we haven't had much of a problem with in terms of battery life. Like our prototypes that we take around to trade shows and things, they last for a good 2-3 days without a charge.
Yeah, just an additional note on that. The 10 hours that we stayed is, you know, the minimal time it will last. And
that's continuous usage.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So it's actually not possible to put in the conditions that we did when we got that 10-hour number. Because we literally juiced up the sensor, the vibration motor, and every single component to take maximum power. And that lasted 10 full hours.
Yeah, it definitely, you know, it's one of those things that's hard. It's always hard to measure battery life, but, you know, you're going to always estimate under, and then it'll work more, and people will be happy, and that's how it works pretty much. So you're crowdfunding, and this isn't the first time that things have been crowdfunding for blind people, but it seems to be a cool idea when you can get enough support for it, and you seem well on your way to doing that. You're trying to raise, was it 50,000 that you're trying to raise? And as of the time of this recording, you're at close to 33,000 already. This is on Indiegogo, and it's under what's called flexible funding, meaning you're going to get the 33,000 even if nothing else were to happen.
I mean, we set ourselves an ambitious goal, but we wanted our sort of backers to know that no matter what, And no matter how much money we raise, it's still going to be a product that goes into production and they will be delivered.
Awesome. So what is this money going towards and how is the crowdfunding going to help? And I do see the pre-orders on here.
So I guess in terms of why we're raising this this fund, it's because I'm not sure if you've seen our price point yet, but we intend to be retailing next year on $199 US, right?
Right.
And right now on Indiegogo, it's actually discounted to $129. So, I mean, if you compare it, like you said, there's been a lot of ultrasonic-based devices prior to us. So if you refer to those devices for price comparison, right, the cheapest, aside from us right now, is at least 2 to 3 times more. And some of them are even 10 times more in terms of price, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're using similar technology, even though we've managed to do a lot of work in terms of minimizing and optimizing a lot of components. But, you know, still, it's electronics, right? So the cost is still there. So what we are trying to do instead is we're trying to raise money and trying to get enough orders to at least fill a part of our first production line. We have to actually produce a lot of units on the first run to be able to drop the cost low enough for this price point.
Sure. And not to mention, you know, I mean, once you've gone through it the first time, you'll be able to perhaps save some costs in the future. Plus, you're going to have units out there. You can learn from them and see how well they work or not work.
For sure.
You have 45, so far 45 out of 100 claimed at that level. So people can still get the $129 price as of now, which is 35% off the retail. So really good deal if you were looking to get one of these. And it looks like you're saying March 2016, obviously estimated because of...
Yeah, so the estimated date is between March and April. We're going to try our hardest for March, but we'll see how it goes. The latest date that you will be able to receive them is April, the end of April 2016.
What kind of things you're looking at towards the future? You know, you said you're going to try to iterate on the product. Have had any ideas come up or things that you might include in a future version or improvements you might make?
For sure. So right now, you sort of detect only what's within a 1 meter diameter field, and it's difficult to distinguish between what's sort of left, right, and straight. So sort of in the future parts of our development, we're going to get a lot more directional feedback incorporated within the device.
Yeah, that's sort of the plan we had from the beginning. To be honest, our first sketchup and our first concepts on the device we're going to be launching around this time was a lot more complex than what the Buzz Clip is right now. But we had to strip off a lot of functionalities and a lot of options. Just because if you think about it, a lot of our end users are over the age of 60, 65. And as a new company, as also with a new product, if the technology is too complex and someone can't understand it within the first 5-10 minutes, a lot of times it would just be tossed aside, right? So we're trying to reintroduce the very simple technology into the community. And as people get used to this technology, we'll start adding more and more functionalities and complexity to it to provide, like Arjun said, start providing information on direction. And once we maybe get it even more fine-tuned, it might start to be able to tell you certain shapes. You know, that's step by step, mm-hmm. Right?
Sure. Where do you you see yourself going forward? Do you think blindness is a viable enough market that you can make enough money staying in the blindness market? Do you want to try to expand beyond that at some point and do some other things? Or
so to be fair, I actually see visually impaired market to be a fair size market. Like this is very noticeable, especially with big phone companies. So for example, Microsoft, Android, and Apple. They started realizing the size of the market as well, right? And that's why they started to add, to put a lot of effort in terms of accessibility because they want to get the community back on board with them, right? So in terms of our field, which is hardware technology, this is it's a different landscape in a sense, but I think we're going the right way instead of, overly charging every single device and, asking people to pay $1,000 for it. We're trying to make it as affordable as possible, and we're trying to reach as many people as possible. And if we can carry that out, I think this is actually a very viable market, to be honest. And in terms of other markets, we might be expanding into other markets just because a lot of other applications have been brought onto us. But at our core, we are catering to the vision impaired market.
Awesome. So people can donate now. Of course, we'll link to everything from our show notes. You have a couple of weeks left to get in on the whole pre-order phase, but you have 100 at $129, and then the price goes up a little bit, again, if you want to get in after that. But you can do it over the next couple of weeks. We'll put the links in the show notes, but I'll let you guys give out your contact information as well if people want to get more information.
For sure. So you can reach us by email at info@immersive.com. That's info@immercive.com. You can also go straight to our Indiegogo campaign that has the most up-to-date information as well as videos and images. And that's at http://igg.me/at/IMERCIV.
And just to add to that too, we are based in Toronto. So whether you're in the States or you're here in Canada, you can reach us by phone if you have any questions that you want to ask us personally. My number will be +1-647-919-6565. And I'll let Arjun tell you his number.
And you can reach me at +1-647-919-9269.
You're going to get a whole bunch of calls now. But hey, hopefully. At least there's interest, right? Calls. And you are on Twitter as well.
Yep. And you can find us on Twitter at @immersive. So at @IMERCIV.
Awesome. Well, always encouraging to see new products and new people in the field and crowdfunding campaigns that look like they have legs. And if you don't raise 50, you're certainly going to come close, already at 65% there with a couple weeks to go. So we definitely wish you the best of luck, and definitely keep us updated as things progress.
For sure, we'll do. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yep. Thank you guys so much.
We got a lot more coming up on BBcast 39, including Sound Off, Last Word, and much more. Stay tuned.
I've had to do a lot of testing lately on all sorts of mobile operating systems, and sometimes I want to have VoiceOver going, or I want to have an inverted screen and an Android. Well, since that last update of Lollipop, it turned everything white and black lettering, and I miss the old white lettering on a black background. So I have with my Samsung, and this will work with Android phones that have the middle triple click button, a physical home button, if you will. I could actually set my triple click to invert colors. And now with the latest versions of TalkBack, I can
alert suspend TalkBack. Suspend TalkBack. Are you sure you can resume TalkBack from the notifications shade? Checked. Always cancel button. Okay button. TalkBack suspended.
Yeah, right? So now I can actually test things in black and white or invert or what have you. And then if I triple click this back, I'm now in color mode and I can look at things in color. And then I can do this to bring TalkBack back.
TalkBack resumed.
And by doing that, in the latest version of TalkBack, you press the volume up and the volume down, and you can turn TalkBack or suspend TalkBack and resume TalkBack on and off. The cool thing is that you can also do this in iOS, no less, right? In iOS, you could set your triple click for what you want most, right? So for me, it's VoiceOver.
VoiceOver on.
Right? And then, if I want to turn on and off colors for inverted, I do this. Invert colors.
Okay, I turned on invert colors.
Sweet! So now I have black and white when I need it, and then VoiceOver when I want it. Turn off invert colors.
Okay, I turned off invert colors.
Now I'm back to true color, and I have VoiceOver. Oh, that's my triple click. So that is the coolest way to do it for me, to be able to flip that on and off and not give up a physical home button to something else. And you can mix and match. Maybe you're going to use VoiceOver every once in a while. You can turn VoiceOver on and off with Siri. TalkBack, it's a little bit different, but you could set it that way to do this and then go in physically and, you know, do a shortcut for doing the inversion. But I found it a lot easier to go ahead and use my triple click on my Galaxy S5 with invert colors and then, or negative colors in Samsung land, and then turn on and off TalkBack with the volume keys. So great way of being able to have your cake and eat it too. magnification, I don't use magnification on mobile devices, but you could do something like that also, especially with Apple, or to set your triple click to be something else on an Android. It really helps, though, having a device that has an actual physical home button when it comes to Android. There's a tip of how sometimes I use my devices for testing. If you got any ideas, send them on to feedback@blindbargains.com.
It's your turn to sound off. Email feedback@blindbargains.com or tweet us at blindbargains.
A couple of episodes ago, Jay showed you how to use Twitter and make that work with a keyboard, with keyboard shortcuts. Well, Debbie Armstrong sent in a wonderful reminder that in a JAWS 16 update, there is a way to do that and pass those keystrokes along through JAWS. And she kind of gives us an idea about how to do that from setting center, which is awesome. I hadn't realized that either. And she said that's kind of something that everybody kind of omitted or didn't really point out. And so you could use Twitter, Facebook, or other things that have like web navigation for keys.
And that's expanding too. In Windows Eyes, it's Control Insert A. They call it web application mode. And I believe NVDA has a similar thing now. So it's kind of like the halfway point between browse mode and forms mode, where you can do some interaction, but you can still pass keys through to apps.
And I can hear a lot of people getting upset about that, but if for a developer, you're developing twice. If they've done it and they could remap on you and break your keystrokes, you might as well just let them do it, because they're going to add feature. Like Facebook is a perfect example. They just got rid of the side notification area. And so regions changed a little bit. Well, as a developer, you'd have to go back and make sure everything worked. And what about those hotkeys? And okay, do we reroute those keys? And then we're going to have people upset about that. It just passed through and let Facebook and Twitter take care of that if they've done their own. It causes a bit more confusion for the user, but it is a lot easier on the developer and you're not having to reinvent the wheel. So that's the reason why they would do that. And again, that way support calls go to the right people. So it's not necessarily a JAWS or WindowEyes or what have you issue. It's that web key gets broken with the particular company. And that can happen with Twitter sometimes. Sometimes you have to refresh Twitter or close the browser and come back in to be able to get those keys to nav again.
In a recent show, we had a question about audio apps on the iPhone and what works and what does not. And one of our regular contributors, Stephen Clower, sent us a long email which details a lot of the results, which I will not read in its entirety, but we will post up there. But a couple of things from here. GarageBand and the Yamaha mobile sequencer, a couple that he recommends for composing music. GarageBand has some more versatility, according to Steve, as far as you can use the touchscreen, or you can do audio, you can do MIDI, or MIDI, or just MIDI. And Yamaha is just a MIDI controller. And there's also things for instruments that you can use to, I've seen that. That's kind of cool. You can have like play guitar right on your iPhone using different apps. There's an app called AmpKit. Hooking up to your guitar and doing things like that. Steve has tested a lot of these types of apps. So do check out the show notes. We're going to put this entire message in there and you can figure that out. If you have an iPad, you have a little more luck because you have more of a screen and you can do more drum stuff there. So lots of tips here. And we were just going to put this message in because it's a pretty good rundown.
Detailed as far as, and awesome. Yes, thank you, Steve.
Absolutely. Thank you, Steve.
And now I can't get the song Midio out of my head. That Phil Collins song you might remember.
No, Midio? That's a Susudio.
Okay. Now it's stuck in my head.
Yeah, close. Darn.
Yeah. Have you ever had that moment where you have a song and you can't get rid of it and you forgot to bring, or maybe your device is out of battery and you're stuck on a long plane and you just keep hearing that song over and over and over again?
Something
that has happened to me once or twice. And the only thing that compounds it is some guy who flies on jets all the time and talks about what great deal he got. And he got it from this site or that site. And he's pulling in these miles. And isn't it just awesome? And I get a free upgrade all the time. I can't stand people like that because they like to flaunt it. Well, some airlines found out that flaunting, here in the last word, is exactly what happened when they offered in 1983, American Airlines did, a pass to fly forever in your lifetime if you spent a lowly $250,000. Now, that would equal out to be something like $600,000, $700,000 in today's dollar. But the point being is that you could fly around the country for free after you spent that. And they didn't really think about this when they instituted it, but you still accrued air miles and had free Admirals Club and could have the ability to book and not show up and not get penalized, or book the same day and just choose. So some people would book a, you know, flight once an hour because they didn't know what time they were going to get to the airport. That was going to hurt. So I'll book it for 10, 12, and 1, 2, or
what
3.
What could go wrong with all this?
Yes.
Oh, man.
And this article tells an amazing story of rampant abuse of this program that is just fascinating. Like, you could book an extra seat. So this guy booked it for his suitcase. He just put his bag next to him and even called it like Bag Ferguson or something like that. It was like his, his last name with bag on it. It's a fascinating article. And I've heard TiVo talk about this too. It's, you know, they had the lifetime at the beginning and then they killed it. Very few people offer these lifetime deals because if you don't write them down airtight, people can go kind of crazy with the rampant abuse. They even had a unit task force that they assigned at American to try and get people off of this thing because they were figuring out that the whole program was costing them like $2 million a year. And even though there were 66 people in the plan, it was costing them $2 million
a year.
And it is a great article and really breaks it down. You still can do this, by the way. It is dramatically changed. So a lot of the loopholes have been patched, but there really still is the ability to do this if you have $3 billion playing around.
Oh, whoa. I only have $2 million. Dang it.
Oh, man. Just look through the couch cushions. Maybe
need a few more sponsors first.
Maybe if you sell a couple of the old Sports Illustrated football phones.
Maybe.
They're collector's items.
What?
Yes. So
I
saw this for many a year, like in the middle of the night, because, you know, back then, kids, we only had like 5 TV channels. So the Sports Illustrated football phone, sign up for a year and get this phone that looked like a football. But as silly as that sounds, it sold magazines. People bought subscriptions for the ability to have a telephone that looked like a football. No?
No.
You don't want a football telephone?
No.
No?
Wait, what's it going to cost me?
Well, glad you asked. Just a simple $19.99 for 3 monthly installments for 52 issues of Sports Illustrated. You know, there you go. See, you're good. You're already there.
You know, out of all the things you could get for your 52 issues of Sports Illustrated, that would be the one I'd want the least.
When really everybody just buys the swimsuit issue and that's really about it and then moves on. That was another thing that they came up with to try and garner sales. I know that they did it for a couple of years, but then they stopped. But if you bought a copy of Madden on Xbox or PlayStation, or you bought a subscription, of Sports Illustrated, you got a copy of Madden. That's how they were selling it for a while. And that was probably a good deal because that's, you know, regularly $59.99 retail. So or if you wait a couple of months after football season, it's really a lot cheaper. It's, you know, you would get that year's Madden and you get a subscription to Sports Illustrated. But I will out myself on this very podcast. Years ago in the 90s, a turbulent decade, Nick at Night got the rights to Get Smart and they offered a shoe phone. It was an actual loafer and it had actual buttons and it was an actual working phone.
Great. So where is your review of this phone?
Well, it wasn't very durable and my friends hated me because I took all the other phones out of the house or hid them somewhere. So they had to use the shoe phone and other people would take pictures of them using the shoe phone. And so people would go, "Can I use your phone?" And I would point to a shoe on the table. And they would just look at it and kind of like, "You're weirder than I realized." And I go, "Yes, now you can be like Agent 86 and talk on the shoe phone." It had a Nick at Night logo on the inside of the shoe. So if you looked in and saw the sole, you saw Nick at Night.
I'm so sad. I missed out on this wonderful promotion.
Oh, it was fantastic. What a great way. I mean, Adult Swim does a lot of these, by the way. If you really want to see some crazy novelty stuff really not even in ThinkGeek, Adult Swim will do some really crazy stuff. And there's a Wikipedia page about their other promotions. They actually did kitchenwares and they had characters on kitchen towels one night and they did it like QVC. They were doing stuff for New Year's Eve where they were actually selling salt shakers as the characters and stuff. So there's some really amazing stuff that Adult Swim gets into. And if you're not sure what that is, that's a Cartoon Network's stuff that's aimed at college people and people who are much older than college people who probably can identify with college people. Maybe there's munchies involved. At 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. Eastern at night, Monday through Friday. And it's a bunch of nerdy stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of original stuff there. Now, you may know it because they also do Family Guy and...
repeats. Family Guy got brought back was repeats on Adult Swim.
That's how it came
back. Was actually pulling in the same amount of ratings as Jay Leno and David Letterman. So
because it was
definitely worth it. And but if you have any crazy collectibles, if you've gotten something that is unique, or if you picked something up that show merchandise, let us know about it. feedback@blindbargains.com. You can also hit us up on Twitter, twitter.com/blindbargains. If you're tired of looking at it, you can put it up in a classified over at blindbargains.com and let other people buy your
tchotchkes. You can sell your Sports Illustrated phone.
That's on the correct. Blind
Bargains classified.
Jay's looking for one.
Know, yeah, hey, you know, we see there's some interesting things. Someone put up a very light Millennium for $100.
Yeah, that's like a deal. A Millennium. Wow,
that's
that is a
good
trip.
Deal for $100. Actually, I mean, that actually did a lot for its time. So you can browse the classifieds from the Blind Bargains app on iPhone or Android, of course, or you can post them on the Blind Bargains website. You can also tweet us at Blind Bargains. And if you want to go to atguys.com, you can do that and do some of your holiday accessory shopping, including that remote that we mentioned earlier and the new Aftershocks and a lot of other cool stuff. And send us your feedback and comments, and we'd love to hear from you.
And while I didn't really mention food all that much in this particular podcast, I did have a tweet this week about 18 unique different value meals you can get around the world from KFC, to read that and other wild tweets, including stuff about science fiction and the like, possibly about the new Star Trek series that was just announced by CBS coming in January 2017. Everyone, 50th anniversary of Star Trek.
Right, never watched Star Trek ever.
I kind of figured. You can follow me over at twitter.com/rangerstation. That's twitter.com/rangerstation, all one word.
Thank you so much, Patrick Perdue, for making us sound amazing. Well, you know, as good as you could,
given the circumstances, you know,
Thanks to Ben and Arjun as well for coming on from Immersive and talking about the Buzz Clip. We really appreciate that. And we got a lot more coming up. We got holiday shows coming up. We have end of year shows coming up. So stay tuned for more of the Blind Bargains cast. And if you're listening us to on the Play All on the app, you have 38 more behind this.
Yay! Enjoy a lot. If you're going back in order, then get your earbuds and your headphones out, because last week's show was really good in stereo, if you will. That's going to do it. And we will talk to you next week. Everyone have a fantastic and safe week.
Bye. This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2015.